Hours pass. I lose track of time. Soldiers rotate in and out of their shifts. The sun changes position. Then, just as the sun mercifully starts to set, I see someone emerge from the elevator and make her way toward me.
June. I hardly recognize Day, even though it's only been 7 hours since the sentencing. He lies crumpled in the center of the circular stand. His skin looks darker, and his hair is completely matted down with sweat. Dried blood still clings to one long strand of hair, as if he chose to dye it. It looks almost black now. He turns his head in my direction as I approach. I'm not sure if he can see me, though, because the sun hasn't completely set and is probably blinding him. Another prodigy, and not just an average one. I've met other prodigies before, but certainly never one that the Republic decided to keep hidden, especially one with a perfect score. One of the soldiers lining the circular stand salutes me. He's sweaty, and his pith helmet doesn't protect his skin from the sun. "Agent Iparis," he says. His accent's from Ruby Sector, and his uniform's row of buttons are freshly polished, pays attention to details. I glance at the other soldiers before looking back at him. "You're all dismissed for now. Tell your men to get some water and shade, and send up an order for your replacements to come early." "Yes, ma'am." The soldier clicks his heels together before shouting a dismissal to the others. When they leave the roof and I'm alone with Day, I remove my cape and kneel down to see his face better. He squints at me but stays quiet. His lips are so cracked that a little blood has trickled down to his chin. He's too weak to talk. I look down towards his wounded leg. It's much worse than it was this morning, not surprisingly, and is swollen to twice its normal size. An infection must have set in. Blood oozes from the edges of the bandage. I absently touch the knife wound at my own side. It doesn't hurt as much anymore. We'll need to get that leg checked. I sigh, then remove the canteen hanging at my belt. "Here, have some water. I'm not allowed to let you die yet." I dribble water on his lips. He flinches at first, but then opens his mouth and lets me pour a thin stream in. I wait while he swallows. He takes forever. And then let him take another long drink.
"Thanks,"
he whispers. He lets out a dry laugh.
"Guess you can go now."
I study him for a moment. His skin is burned and his face drenched with sweat, but his eyes are still bright, if a bit unfocused. I suddenly remember the first moment I saw him. Dust everywhere. And out of that emerged this beautiful boy with the bluest eyes I'd ever seen, holding his hand out to help me to my feet.
"Where are my brothers?"
he whispers.
"Are they both alive?"
I nod. "Yes."
"And Tess is safe? No one's arrested her?"
"Not to my knowledge."
"What are they doing with Eden?"
I think back to what Thomas told me, that the generals from the war front have come to see him. "I don't know." Day turns his head away and closes his eyes. He concentrates on breathing.
"Well, don't kill them," he murmurs. "They didn't do anything. And Eden, he's not a lab rat, you know."
He's silent for a minute.
"I never got your name. Guess it's no big deal now, is it? You already know mine."
I stare at him. "My name is June Iparis."
"June," Day murmurs.
I feel a strange warmth at the sound of my name on his lips. He turns to face me.
"June, I'm sorry about your brother. I didn't know anything would happen to him."
I'm trained not to take the word of a prisoner. I know that they'll lie, and they'll say anything they can to make you vulnerable. But this feels different. Somehow, he sounds so genuine, so serious. What if he is telling me the truth? What if something else happened to Mateus that night? I take a deep breath and force myself to look down. Logic above all else, I tell myself. Logic will save you when nothing else will. Hey! I remember something else now. Open your eyes again and look at me. He does as I say. I lean over to study him. Yes, it's still there. That strange little blemish in one of his eyes. A ripple in an otherwise ocean blue iris. How did you get that thing in your eye? I gesture at my own. That imperfection. Something must have sounded funny, because Day laughs once before bursting into a coughing fit.
That imperfection was a gift from the Republic.
What do you mean? He hesitates. I can tell he's having trouble forming his thoughts.
I've been in the lab of the Central Hospital before, you know, on the night I took my trial.
He tries to lift a hand to point at his eye, but the chains clank together and drag his arm back down.
They injected something.
I frown. The night of your 10th birthday? What were you doing in the lab? You were supposed to be on your way to the labor camps. Day smiles as if he's about to fall asleep.
I thought you were a smart one.
Apparently the sun hasn't baked all the attitude out of him yet. And what about your old knee injury?
Your Republic gave me that too, on the same night I got my eye imperfection.
Why would the Republic give you those wounds, Day? Why would they want to damage someone who got a perfect 1500 on his trial score? This catches Day's attention.
What are you talking about? I failed my trial.
He doesn't know either. Of course he wouldn't. I lower my voice to a whisper. No, you didn't. You got a perfect score.
Is this some kind of trick?
Day moves his injured leg a little and tenses up in pain.
A perfect score? Ha! I don't know anyone who's ever gotten a 1500.
I cross my arms. I did. He raises an eyebrow at me.
You did? You're the prodigy with the perfect score?
Yes, I nod at him. And apparently, so were you. Day rolls his eyes and looks away again.
That's ridiculous.
I shrug. Believe what you want.
Doesn't make sense. Shouldn't I be in your position? Isn't that the point of your precious trial?
Day looks like he wants to stop, hesitates, and then continues.
They injected something into one of my eyes that stung like wasp poison. They also cut up my knee with a scalpel. Then they force-fed me some kind of medicine, and the next thing I knew, I was lying in a hospital basement with a bunch of other corpses. But I wasn't dead.
He laughs again. It sounds so weak.
Great birthday.
They experimented on him. Probably for the military. This I'm sure of now, and the thought makes me ill. They were taking tiny tissue samples from his knee, as well as from his heart and his eye. His knee. They must have wanted to study his unusual physical abilities, his speed and agility. His eye. Maybe it wasn't an injection, but an extraction. Something to test why his vision was so sharp. His heart. They fed him medicine to see how low his heart rate could go, and they were probably disappointed when his heart temporarily stopped. That's when they thought he died. The reason for all of this becomes clear. They wanted to develop those tissue samples into something. I don't know what. Pills, contact lenses, whatever could improve our soldiers, to make them run faster, see better, think smarter, or endure harsher conditions. All this flies through my head in a second before I can stop it. No way. This isn't in line with Republic values. Why waste a prodigy in this way?
Unless they saw something dangerous in him.
Some defiant spark. The same rebellious spirit he has now. Something that made them think it'd be riskier to educate him than to sacrifice his possible contributions to society. Last year, 38 kids scored higher than 1,400. Maybe the Republic would want to make this one disappear. But Day is not just any prodigy. He has a perfect score. What was it that made them nervous?
Can I ask you a question now?
Day asks.
Is it my turn?
Yes. I look over to the elevator, where a new rotation of guards have just arrived. I hold up a hand and tell them to stay where they are. You can ask.
I want to know why they took Eden away. The plague. I know you rich folks have it easy. New plague vaccinations every year, and whatever meds you need. But haven't you wondered? Haven't you wondered why it never goes away? Or why it comes back so regularly?
My eyes dart back to him. What are you trying to say? Day manages to focus his eyes on me.
What I'm trying to say. Yesterday, when they dragged me out of my cell, I saw that red 0 stamped on some double doors in Batala Hall. I've seen numbers like that in Lake, too. Why would they show up in the poor sectors? What are they doing out there? What are they pumping into the sectors?
I narrow my eyes. You think the Republic is intentionally poisoning people? Day, you're on dangerous ground. But Day doesn't stop. Instead, his voice takes on a more urgent tone.
That's why they wanted Eden, right?
He whispers.
To see the results of their mutated plague virus. Why else?
They want to prevent whatever new disease he's spreading. Day laughs, but again it makes him cough.
No, they're using him. They're using him.
His voice grows quiet.
They're using him.
His eyes grow heavy. The strain of talking has worn him out. You're delirious, I reply. But while Thomas's touch now repulses me, I feel no revulsion towards Day. I should, but the feeling just doesn't come. A lie like that is treason against the Republic. Besides, why would Congress authorize such a thing? Day doesn't take his eyes off me, and just when I think he's lost the strength to respond, his voice comes out sounding even more insistent.
Think about it this way. How do they know what vaccines to give you every year? They always work. Don't you find it strange that they can make vaccines that match the new plague that's popped up? How can they predict which vaccine they'll need?
I sit back on my heels. I've never questioned the annual vaccinations we're required to have. Never had any reason to doubt them. And why should I? My father used to work behind those double doors, working hard to find new ways to combat the plague. No, I can't listen to this anymore. I pluck my cape from the ground and tuck it under my arm.
One more thing,
Day whispers as I stand. I glance down at him. His eyes burn right into me.
You think we go to labor camps if we fail? June, the only labor camps are the morgues in the hospital basement.
I don't dare linger. Instead, I walk away from the platform, away from Day. But my heart pounds against my chest. The soldiers waiting by the elevator stand even straighter as I approach. I arrange my face in an expression of pure irritation. Unchain him, I order one of the soldiers. Take him down to the hospital wing and get that knee of his fixed. Give him some food and water. He won't last the night otherwise. The soldier salutes me, but I don't bother to look at him before shutting the elevator door.
Day. I have nightmares again. This time they're of Tess. I'm running in the streets of Lake. Somewhere ahead of me, Tess is running too, but she doesn't know where I am. She turns left and right, desperate to see my face, but all she finds are strangers and street police and soldiers. I call out for her, but my legs can barely move as if I'm wading through a thick sludge. Tess! I shout. I'm here! I'm right behind you! She can't hear me. I look on helplessly as she runs right into a soldier, and when she tries to turn away from him, he grabs her and throws her to the ground. I scream something. The soldier lifts his gun and points it at Tess. Then I see that it's not Tess, but my mother, who lies in a puddle of blood. I try to run to her, but instead I stay hidden behind a chimney on a roof, crouched like a coward. It's my fault she's dead. Then suddenly, I'm back in the hospital lab again, and the doctors and nurses are standing over me. I squint in the blinding light. Pain shoots through my leg. They're cutting open my knee again, pulling back my flesh to reveal the bones underneath, scraping at it with their scalpels. I arch my back and scream. One of the nurses tries to hold me down. My flailing arm knocks over a tray somewhere. "Hold still! Damn it, boy, I'm not going to hurt you!" It takes me a minute to wake up. The blurry hospital scene shifts, and I realize I'm staring up at a similar fluorescent light and that a doctor is hovering over me. He wears goggles and a face mask. I give a shout and try to bolt upright, but I'm tied to an operating table by a pair of belts. The doctor sighs and slides his face mask down. "Look at me, bandaging up a criminal like you when I could be helping soldiers from the war front." I look around, confused. Guards line the walls of this hospital room. A nurse is cleaning bloody equipment at the sink. "Where am I?" The doctor gives me an impatient look. "You're in Batala Hall's hospital wing. Agent of Paris ordered me to fix up your leg. Apparently we're not allowed to let you die before your formal execution." I lift my head as far as I can and look down at my leg. Clean bandages cover up the wound. When I try to move the leg a little, I notice with surprise that the pain is far less than before. I glance at the doctor. "What did you do?" He only shrugs, then peels off his gloves and starts washing his hands at one of the sinks. "Patch things up a bit. You'll be able to stand for your execution." He pauses. "Don't know if that's what you wanted to hear." I slump back down onto the gurney and close my eyes. The diminished pain in my leg is such a relief that I try to savor it. The pieces of my nightmare still linger in my mind, too fresh to put away. Where is Tess now? Can she make it without someone there to watch her back? She's nearsighted. Who will help her when she can't make out the shadows at night? As for my mother, I'm not strong enough to think about her right now. Someone raps loudly on the door. "Open up!" a man calls out. "Commander Jameson's here to see the prisoner." The prisoner. I smile at that. The soldiers don't even like calling me by my name. The guards in the room barely have time to unlock the door and move out of the way before Commander Jameson bursts in, clearly annoyed. She snaps her fingers. "Get this boy off the gurney and put him in some chains," she barks. Then she shoves one finger into my chest. "You! You're just a kid. You never even went to college. You failed your trial. How are you ever able to outsmart soldiers on the streets? How do you cause so much trouble?" She bares her teeth at me. "I knew you'd be a bigger nuisance than you're worth. You have a knack for wasting my soldiers' time, not to mention the soldiers of several other commanders." I have to grit my teeth to keep from shouting back at her. Soldiers hurry over to me and start undoing the gurney's belts. Beside me, the doctor bows his head. "If you don't mind, Commander," he says. "Has something happened? What's going on?" Commander Jameson fixes her furious gaze on him. He shrinks away. "Protesters in front of Batala Hall," she snaps. "They're attacking the street police." The soldiers pull me off the gurney and onto my feet. I wince as my weight transfers onto my bad leg.
"Protesters?"
"Yes. Rioters." Commander Jameson grabs my face. "My own soldiers had to be called in to help, which means my schedule is entirely disrupted. I've already had one of my best men sent in here with lacerations on his face. Filthy cons like you don't know how to treat our military boys." She shoves my face away in disgust and turns her back on me. "Take him away," she calls out to the soldiers holding me. "Be quick about it." We exit the hospital room. Soldiers rush back and forth in the hallway. Commander Jameson keeps pressing a hand against her ear, listening intently, then shouting orders. As I'm dragged toward the elevators, I see several large monitors, something I pause to admire for a second as I've never seen them in Lake Sector, broadcasting exactly what Commander Jameson just told us. I can't hear the voiceover, but the text headlines are unmistakable. Disturbance outside Batala Hall. Units responding. Await further orders. This isn't a public broadcast, I realize. The video shows the square in front of Batala Hall packed with several hundred people. I pick out the line of black-clad soldiers struggling to contain the crowd near the front. Other soldiers run along rooftops and ledges, hurrying into position with their rifles. I get a good look at some of the protesters as we pass the last monitor, the ones clustered together under the streetlights. Some of them have painted a blood-red streak into their hair. Then we arrive at the elevators, and the soldiers shove me inside. They're protesting because of me. The thought fills me with excitement and dread. No way will the military let this slide. They'll seal off the poor sectors entirely and arrest every last rioter in the square. Or they'll kill them.
June. When I was young, Mateus was sometimes called away to deal with minor rebellions, and afterward he'd tell me about them. The story was always the same. A dozen or so poor folk, usually teens, sometimes older, causing trouble in one of the sectors, angry about the plague quarantines or taxes. Several dust bombs later, they were all arrested and taken to court. But I've never seen a riot like this one, with hundreds of people risking their lives. Nothing even close to this. What's wrong with these people? I ask Thomas. They've lost their minds. We're standing on the raised platform outside Batala Hall, with his entire patrol facing the crowd in front of us, while another of Commander Jameson's patrols is pushing people back with shields and batons. Earlier, I'd peeked in on Day as the doctor operated on his leg. I wonder if he's awake and seeing this chaos on the hall monitors. I hope not. No need for him to see what he's started. The thought of him, and his accusation against the Republic, that the Republic creates the plagues, kills kids who fail the trial, fills me with rage. I pull my gun out of its holster. Might as well have it ready. Ever seen something like this? I ask, trying to keep my voice even. Thomas shakes his head. Only once, a long time ago. Some of his dark hair falls across his face. It's not combed back as nicely as usual. He must have been out in the crowds earlier. One hand lingers on the gun strapped to his belt, while the other rests on a rifle slung around his shoulder. He doesn't look at me. He hasn't looked at me straight on since he tried kissing me last night in the hall. A bunch of fools, he replies. If they don't back down soon, the commanders will make them regret it. I glance up to see several commanders standing on one of Batala Hall's balconies. It's too dark now to be sure, but I don't think Commander Jameson is with them. I know she's giving orders through her mouthpiece, though, because Thomas listens intently with one hand pressed against his ear. But whatever she's saying is only for Thomas, and I have no idea what she's telling him. The crowd below us continues to push. I can tell from their clothes, torn shirts and trousers, mismatched shoes filled with holes, that almost all of them are from the poor sectors near the lake. Secretly, I will them to disperse. Get out of here before things get worse. Thomas leans over to me and nods towards the center of the crowd. See that pitiful bunch? I'd already noticed what he's pointing out, but I still follow his gaze politely. A group of protesters have streaked their hair scarlet, imitating the blood-stained lock Day had when he stood out here for his sentencing. A poor choice for a hero, Thomas goes on. Day will be dead in less than a week. I nod once, but say nothing. A few screams echo from the crowd. One patrol has made its way around to the back of the square, and now they have the crowd boxed in, pushing people in towards the square's center. I frown. This isn't protocol for handling an unruly mob. In school, we were taught that dust bombs, or tear gas, is more than enough to do the job, but there's no sign of that. None of the soldiers wear gas masks. And now, yet another patrol has started chasing away the stragglers gathered outside the square, where the streets are too chaotic and narrow to protest properly. What's Commander Jameson telling you? I ask Thomas. Thomas's dark hair falls around his eyes and covers his expression.
She says to stay put and wait for her command.
We don't do anything for a good half hour. I keep one hand in my pocket, absently rubbing Day's pendant. Somehow the crowd reminds me of Skiz. There's probably even some of the same people. That's when I see the soldiers running along the tops of the square's buildings. Some hurry along ledges, while others are gathered in a straight line across the roofs. Odd. Soldiers usually have black tassels and a single row of silver buttons on their jackets. Their arm insignias are navy blue or red or silver or gold. But these soldiers have no buttons on their jackets. Instead, a white stripe runs diagonally across their chest and their armbands are gray. It takes me another second to realize who they are. Thomas! I tap him and point up to the roofs. Executioners! No surprise on his face, no emotion in his eyes. He clears his throat.
So they are.
What are they doing? My voice rises. I glance to the protesters in the square, then back up to the roofs. None of the soldiers have dust bombs or tear gas. Instead, each one has a gun slung around his shoulder. They're not dispersing them, Thomas. They're trapping them in. Thomas gives me a stern look.
Hold steady, June. Pay attention to the crowd.
As my eyes stay turned up toward the roofs, I notice Commander Jameson step out onto the top of Batala Hall, flanked by soldiers. She speaks into her mouthpiece. Several seconds pass. A terrible feeling builds up in my chest. I know where this is going. Thomas suddenly murmurs something into his mic, a response to a command. I glance at him. He catches my gaze for a second, and then he looks towards the rest of the patrol standing on the platform with us.
Fire at will,
he shouts. Thomas! I want to say more, but at that instant, shots ring out from both the roofs and the platform. I lunge forward. I don't know what I plan to do, wave my arms in front of the soldiers, but Thomas grabs my shoulder before I can step forward.
Stay back, June.
Tell your men to stand down, I shout, scrambling out of his grasp. Tell them! That's when Thomas throws me to the ground so hard that I feel the wound in my side break open.
Damn it, June, he says. Stay back!
The ground's surprisingly cold. I crouch there. For once, at a loss, unable to move. I don't really understand what just happened. The skin around my wound burns. Bullets rain down on the square. People in the crowd collapse like levees in a flood. Thomas, stop! Please stop! I want to get up and scream in his face, to hurt him somehow. Mateus would kill you for this, Thomas, if he were alive. But instead I cover my ears. The gunshots are deafening. The gunfire lasts only a minute, if that, but it seems like forever. Thomas finally shouts an order to cease fire, and those in the crowd who haven't been shot fall to their knees and throw their hands up over their heads. Soldiers rush to them, cuffing their arms behind their backs, forcing them together into clusters. I push myself up onto my knees, my ears still ring from the gunfire. I scan the scene of blood and bodies and prisoners. There are 97, 98 dead. No, at least 120. Hundreds more are in custody. I can't even concentrate enough to count them. Thomas glances at me before stepping off the platform. His face is grave, even guilty, but I know with a sinking feeling that he feels guilty only for throwing me to the ground. Not for this massacre he's leaving behind. He heads back towards Batala Hall with several soldiers. I turn my face away so I don't have to watch him.
Day. We ride up several floors until I hear the elevator's chains come to a scraping halt. Two soldiers drag me out into a familiar hallway. They're returning me to my cell, I guess. At least for now. For the first time since waking up on the gurney, I realize I'm exhausted and slump my head against my chest. The doctor must have injected me with something to keep me from flailing around too much during the knee operation. Everything around me looks blurred at the edges, as if I'm sprinting. Then the soldiers come to a sudden stop halfway down the corridor, a good distance away from my cell. I look up in mild surprise. We stand outside one of the rooms I'd noticed earlier, the ones with the clear glass windows. Interrogation chambers. So, they want more information before they execute me. Static, then a voice comes through one of the soldier's earpieces. The soldier nods. "Let's take him in," he says. "Captain says he'll arrive shortly." I stand inside, waiting as the minutes tick by. Guards with blank faces stand at the door, while two others hold my shackled arms. I know this room is supposed to be more or less soundproof, but I swear I hear the sound of guns and the vibrations of distant screams. My heart pounds. The troops must be firing on the crowd in the square. Are they dying because of me? More time passes. I wait. My eyelids grow heavy. I want nothing more than to curl into a ball in the corner of my cell and sleep. Finally, I hear footsteps approaching. The door swings open to reveal a young man dressed in black, with dark hair that falls over his eyes. Silver epaulettes sit on each shoulder. The other soldiers click their heels together. The man waves them off. Now I recognize him. This is the captain who shot my mother. June had mentioned him before. Thomas. Commander Jameson must have sent him. "Mr. Wing," he says. He approaches me and crosses his arms. "What a pleasure to formally meet you. I was beginning to worry that I'd never get the chance." I will myself to stay silent. He looks uncomfortable being in the same room as me, and his expression says that he really hates me. "My commander wants me to ask you some standard procedural questions before your execution date. We'll try to keep it cordial, although of course we started off on the wrong foot." I can't help choking out a laugh. "Really? You think so?" Thomas doesn't reply, but I see him swallow hard in an effort not to react. He reaches into his cloak and pulls out a small gray remote. He points it at the room's blank wall. A projection comes up. Some police report, with pictures of a person I don't recognize. "I'm going to show you a series of photos, Mr. Wing," he says. "The people you'll see are suspected of Patriot involvement." The Patriots had tried in vain to recruit me. Cryptic notes scrawled on alley walls above where I slept. An escort on a street corner who slipped me a note. A small parcel of money with a proposition. After ignoring their offers for a while, I stopped hearing from them. "I've never worked with the Patriots," I snap. "If I ever kill, I'll do it on my own terms." "You may claim no affiliation with them, but perhaps some have crossed your path, and perhaps you'd like to help us find them." "Oh, sure. You killed my mother. You can imagine I'm dying to help you out." Thomas manages to ignore me again. He glances at the first photo projected on the wall. "Know this person?" I shake my head. "Never seen him before." Thomas clicks the remote. Another photo pops up. "How about this one?" "Nope." Another photo. "How about this?" "Nope." Yet another stranger pops up on the wall. "Seen this girl before?" "Never seen her in my life." More unfamiliar faces. Thomas goes through them without blinking an eye or questioning my responses. What a stupid puppet of the state. I watch him as we continue, wishing I weren't chained so I could beat this man to the ground. More photos, more strange faces. Thomas doesn't question a single one of my terse responses. In fact, it seems like he can't wait to get out of this room and far away from me. Then a photo pops up of someone I do recognize. The blurry image shows a girl with long hair, longer than the bobbed cut I remember. No Vine tattoo yet. Apparently, Kaede is a Patriot. I don't dare let the recognition show on my face. "Look," I say, "if I knew any of these people, do you really think I'd tell you?" Thomas is trying so hard to hold his composure. That will be all, Mr. Wing. Oh, come on. That's not all. I can tell you'd give anything to take a swing at me. So do it. I dare you. His eyes have taken on a furious glow, but he still holds back. My orders were to ask you a series of questions, he says tightly. That's it. We're done here. Why? You afraid of me or something? Only brave enough to shoot people's mothers? Thomas narrows his eyes, then shrugs. She's just one less slum con to deal with. I clench my fist and spit right in his face. This seems to break his resolve. His left fist hits me hard across the jaw, and my head snaps to the side. Spots explode before my eyes. Think you're a star, don't you? He says. Just because you pulled some pranks and played charity work at some street scum? Well, let me tell you a secret. I'm from a poor sector, too. But I followed the rules. I worked my way up. I earned my country's respect. The rest of you people just sit around and complain and blame the state for your bad luck. Bunch of dirty, lazy cons. He punches me again. My head rocks back and I taste blood in my mouth. My body trembles from the pain. He grabs my collar and pulls me close. My shackles clank. Miss Paris told me about what you did to her on the streets. How dare you force yourself onto someone of her rank? Ah, here's what's really bothering him. I guess he found out about the kiss. I can't help grinning, even though my face screams in pain. Aw, is that what's got you down? I've seen the way you look at her. You want her bad, yeah? Is that something you're also trying to earn your way up to, Trot? Hate to burst your bubble, but I didn't force her into anything. A deep scarlet rage flashes across his face. She's looking forward to your execution, Mr. Wing. I can guarantee you that. I laugh. Sore loser, huh? Here, I'll make you feel better. I'll tell you all about what it was like. Hearing about it is the next best thing, isn't it? Thomas grabs my neck. His hands are shaking. I'd be careful if I were you, boy, he spits. Maybe you've forgotten that you still have two brothers, both at the mercy of the Republic. Watch your tongue, unless you want to see their bodies lined up next to your mother's. He hits me again, then one of his knees slams into my stomach. I gasp for air. I picture Eden and John and force myself to calm down. Force away the pain. Stay strong. Don't let him get to you. He hits me two more times. He's breathing hard now. With a great effort, he lowers his arms and exhales. That will be all, Mr. Wing, he says in a low voice. I'll see you on your execution day. I can't speak through the pain, so I just try to keep my eyes focused on him. He has a strange expression, as if he's angry or disappointed that I forced him from his orderly state. He turns and leaves the room without a word.
June. That night, Thomas spends half an hour standing outside my door, trying a dozen different kinds of apologies. He is really sorry. He didn't want me to get hurt. He didn't want me to resist Commander Jameson's orders. He didn't want me to get in trouble. He was trying to protect me. I sit on my couch with Ollie, staring off into space. I can't get the sound of those machine guns out of my head. Thomas has always been disciplined. Today was not different. He didn't hesitate, not for a second, to obey our commander. He'd carried out the extermination as if he was preparing for a routine plague sweep or for a night guarding an airfield. Is it worse that he followed the orders so faithfully, or that he doesn't even know that this is what I want him to apologize for? June, are you listening to me? I concentrate on scratching Ollie behind his ears. Mateus's old journals are still strewn on the coffee table, along with our parents' photo albums.
You're wasting your time, I call back to him. Please, just let me in. I want to see you.
I'll see you tomorrow.
I won't be long, I promise. I'm really sorry.
Thomas, I'll see you tomorrow.
June.
I raise my voice.
I said I'll see you tomorrow.
Silence. I wait another minute, trying to distract myself by petting Ollie. After a while, I get up and look through the peephole. The hallway's empty. When I'm finally convinced he's gone, I lie awake on the couch for another hour. My mind races from the events in the square, today's appearance on the rooftop, today's outrageous claims about the plague and the trial, and then back to Thomas. The Thomas that follows Commander Jameson's orders without question is a different Thomas from the one who worried about my safety in the lake sector. Growing up, Thomas was awkward, but always polite, especially to me. Or maybe it's me who's changed. When I tracked Day's family down and watched Thomas shoot his mother, when I looked on today as the crowd in the square was gunned down, I stood by both times and did nothing. Does that make me the same as Thomas? Are we doing the right thing by following our orders? Surely the Republic knows best. And as for what Day told me, my temper rises at the thought of it. My father had worked behind those double doors. Mateus had mentored under Chan in overseeing the trials. Why would we poison and kill our own people? I sigh, sit up, and grab one of Mateus's journals off the coffee table. This one is about an exhausting week of cleanup duty after Hurricane Elijah tore through Los Angeles. Another spells out his first week in Commander Jameson's patrol. A third one is short, only a paragraph long, and complains about working two night shifts in a row. This makes me smile. I can still remember his words.
I can barely stay awake,
Mateus had told me after his first night shift.
Does she honestly think we can guard anything after pulling an all-nighter? I was so out of it today that the colony's chancellor himself could have walked into Batala Hall, and I wouldn't have known it.
I feel a tear on my cheek and quickly wipe it away. Ollie whines next to me. I reach out and let my hand sink into the thick white fur around his neck, and he drops his head into my lap with a sigh. Mateus had fretted over such small things. My eyes grow heavy as I continue to read. The words start to blur together on the page until I can't quite understand what each entry means anymore. Finally, I put the journal aside and drift off into sleep. Day appears in my dreams. He holds my hands in his own, and my heart pounds at the touch. His hair falls all around his shoulders like a silk drape, one streak of it scarlet with blood, and his eyes look pained. I didn't kill your brother. He pulls me close. I promise you, I couldn't have. When I wake up, I lie still for a while and let Day's words run through my head. My eyes wander over to the computer desk. How had that fateful night played out? If Day hit Mateus's shoulder, then how did the knife end up in my brother's chest? This brief thought makes my heart ache. I look at Ollie. Who would want to hurt Mateus? I ask him. Ollie looks back at me with mournful eyes. And why? I push myself off the couch several minutes later, then wander over to my desk and turn on my computer. I go back to the crime report from the Central Hospital. 4 pages of text, 1 page of photos. It's the photos that I decide to take a closer look at. After all, Commander Jameson had only given me a few minutes to analyze Mateus's body, and I'd used the time poorly. But how could I have concentrated? I never doubted that the murderer was anyone but Day. I hadn't studied the photos as closely as I should have. Now, I double-click on the first photos and enlarge them to full screen. The sight makes me lightheaded. Mateus's cold, lifeless face tilts up to the sky, and his hair fans out in a small circle under his head. Blood stains his shirt. I take a deep breath, close my eyes, and tell myself to concentrate this time. I'd always managed to get through reading the text of the report, but I could never bring myself to study the photos. Now I have to. I open my eyes and focus back on my brother's body. I wish I'd studied the wounds more closely in person when I had the chance. First, I make sure the knife in the photo is indeed buried in his chest. Bits of blood stain the hilt. I can't see any of the blade. Then I look at Mateus's shoulder. Although it is covered up by his sleeve, I can see that a sizable circle of blood stains the cloth there. It couldn't all be spillover from the chest. There must be another wound. I enlarge the photo again. Nope, too blurry. Even if there is a knife-like slice in the sleeve over his shoulder, I can't see it at this angle. I close the photo and click on another one. That's when I realize something. All the photos on this page are taken at an angle. I can barely make out the details on his shoulder, and even on the knife. I frown. Poor crime scene photography. Why weren't there close-up photos of the actual wounds? I scroll through the report again, searching for pages I might have missed. But that was it. I go back to the same page, then try to make sense of it. Maybe the other photos are classified. What if Commander Jameson took them out to spare me the pain? I shake my head. No, that's stupid. Then she wouldn't have sent any photos with this report at all. I stare at the screen. Then, dare to imagine the alternative. What if Commander Jameson took them out to hide something from me? No. I sit back and stare at the first photo again. Why would Commander Jameson want to hide the details of my brother's murder from me? She loves her soldiers. She was outraged by Mateus's death. She even arranged for his funeral. She wanted him on her patrol. She was the one who made him captain. But I doubt the crime scene photographer was so rushed that he would take such a bad set of photos. I think about it from several angles, but keep coming to the same conclusion. This report is incomplete. I run a hand through my hair in frustration. I don't understand it. Suddenly, I look closer at the knife in the photo. It's grainy, and details are almost impossible to make out. But something triggers an old memory that makes my stomach churn. The blood on the knife's hilt is dark, but there's another mark there too, something darker than the blood. At first, I think it's a part of the faint pattern on the knife, but these marks are on top of the blood. They look black, thick, and textured. I try to remember what the knife looked like on the night it happened, when I had a chance to look at it myself. These black marks look like rifle grease, almost like the streak of grease that was on Thomas's forehead when I first saw him that night.
Day. When June visits me again the next morning, even she looks shocked, if just for a second, at my figure slumped against one wall of my cell. I tilt my head in her direction. She hesitates at the sight of me, but quickly regains her composure. "I assume you made someone angry," she says, then snaps her fingers at the soldiers. "Everyone out! I want a private word with the prisoner." She nods up at the security cameras positioned in each corner. "And cut those too." The soldier in charge salutes. "Yes, ma'am." As several of them hurry to click off the cameras, I see her take out two knives sheathed at her belt. Somehow I must have made her angry, too. A laugh bubbles out of my throat and turns into a coughing fit. Well, I guess we should just get it all out of the way. When the soldiers leave and the door slams shut behind June, she walks over and crouches beside me. I brace myself for the feeling of the blade against my skin. "Day." She hasn't moved. Instead, she puts her knives back by her belt and pulls out a canteen of water. Just a display for the soldiers, I guess. She splashes some of the cool liquid on my face. I flinch, but then I open my mouth to catch some of it. Water never tasted so good. June squirts some water directly into my mouth, then puts the canteen away. "Your face looks awful." There's concern, and something else in her expression. "Who did this to you?" Nice of you to ask. I'm amazed she even cares. You can thank your captain friend for this. Thomas? That's the guy. I don't think he's very happy that I got a kiss from you and he hasn't. So he interrogated me about the Patriots. Apparently Kaede's a Patriot. Small world, huh? Anger flashes across June's face. He never mentioned this to me. Last night he... Well, I'll take it up with Commander Jameson. Thanks. I blink water out of my eyes. I was wondering when you'd come. I hesitate for a second. Do you know anything about Tess yet? If she's alive? June looks down. Sorry, she replies. I have no way of knowing where she is. She should be safe as long as she stays low. I haven't mentioned her to anyone. She hasn't appeared in any of the recent arrests. Or deaths. I'm frustrated by the lack of news, but relieved at the same time. How are my brothers? June tightens her lips. I have no access to Eden, although I'm sure he's still alive. John is doing as well as can be expected. When she looks up again, I see confusion and sadness in her eyes. I'm sorry you had to deal with Thomas yesterday. Thanks, I guess. I whisper. Is there any particular reason why you're nicer than usual today? I don't expect June to take this question seriously, but she does. She stares at me, and then seats herself in front of me with her legs folded underneath her. She seems different today. Subdued, maybe. Even sad. Uncertain. An expression I've never seen before, even when I first met her on the streets. Something bothering you? June stays silent for a long while, with her eyes cast down. Finally, she looks at me. She's searching for something, I realize. Is she trying to find a way to trust me? I studied my brother's crime scene report again last night. Her voice trickles to a whisper so that I have to lean forward to hear her. And? I say. June's eyes search mine. She hesitates again. Day? Can you say honestly and truly that you didn't kill Mateus? She must have found something. She wants a confession. The night at the hospital flashes through my thoughts. My disguise, Mateus watching me as I enter the hospital, the young doctor I'd held hostage, the bullets bouncing off the refrigerators, my long fall to the ground, then the face-off with Mateus, the way I'd thrown my knife at him. I'd seen it hit his shoulder, so far from his chest that it couldn't possibly have killed him. I hold June's gaze with my own. I did not kill your brother. I reach out to touch her hand and wince at the pain that shoots up my arm. I don't know who did. I'm sorry for injuring him at all, but I had to save my own life. I wish I'd had more time to think it through. June nods quietly. The look on her face is so heartbreaking that I wish for a second that I could hold her. Someone needs to hold her. I really miss him, she whispers. I thought he would be around for a long time, you know? Someone I could always lean on. He was all I had left. And now he's gone and I wish I knew why. She shakes her head slowly, as if defeated, and then lets her eyes meet mine again. Her sadness makes her impossibly beautiful, like snow blanketing a barren landscape. And I don't know why. That's the worst part, Day. I don't know why he died. Why would someone want him dead? Her words are so similar to my thoughts about my mother that I can barely breathe. I didn't know that June had lost her parents, although I should have guessed it from the way she carries herself. June was not the one who shot my mother. She was not the one who brought the plague into my home. She was a girl who'd lost her brother, and someone had led her to believe I did it, and in anguish she had tracked me down. If I'd been in her place, would I have done anything differently? She's crying now. I give her a small smile, then sit up straighter and stretch my hand out toward her face. The shackles on my wrist clank together. I wipe away the tears from under one of her eyes. Neither of us says anything. There's no need to. She's thinking, if I'm right about her brother, then what else am I right about? After a moment, June takes my hand and holds it against her cheek. Her touch sends warmth coursing through me. She's so lovely. I ache to pull her to me now and press my lips against hers and wash away the sorrow in her eyes. I wish I could go back to that night in the alley for just 1 second. I'm the first one to speak. You and I may have the same enemy, I say. And they've pitted us against each other. June takes a deep breath. I'm not sure yet, she says, even though I can tell by her voice that she agrees with me. It's dangerous for us to talk like this. She looks away, reaches into her cloak, and pulls out something I thought I had lost at the hospital. Here, I want to give this back to you. I have no more use for it. I want to snatch it from her hand, but the chains weigh me down. In her palm is my pendant necklace, the smooth bumps on its surface scraped and dirty, but still more or less whole, the necklace part lying in a pile in her palm. You had it, I whisper. You found it at the hospital that night, didn't you? That's how you recognized me when you finally found me. I must have reached for it. June nods quietly, then takes my hand and drops the pendant into my palm. I look at it in wonder. My father. I can't keep the memory away now that I'm staring at my pendant again. I think back to the day he visited us after 6 months without a word. When he was safely inside and we draped curtains over the windows, he wrapped his arms around Mom and kissed her for such a long time. He kept one hand pressed protectively on her stomach. John waited patiently to greet him, hands in his pockets. I was still young enough to hug his leg. Eden wasn't born yet. He was still inside Mom's growing belly. How are my boys? My father said after he finally let go of Mom. He patted my cheek and smiled at John. John gave him a big, toothy grin. He had managed to grow his hair long enough to tie it back in a tail. He held up a certificate. Look, he said. I passed my trial. You did! My father clapped John on the back and shook his hand as if he were a man. I can still remember the relief in his eyes, the tremor of joy in his words. Back then, we all worried that John would be the one to fail the trial, considering his trouble with reading. I'm proud of you, Johnny. Good job. Then he looked at me. I remember studying his face. Dad's official job in the Republic was to clean up after the warfront soldiers, of course, but there were always hints that this wasn't the only job he had. Hints like the stories he sometimes told about the colonies and their glittering cities, their advanced technology and festive holidays. At that moment, I wanted to ask him why he was always gone even after his warfront rotation should have returned him home. Why he never came to see us. But something else distracted me. There's something in your vest pocket, Dad, I said. Sure enough, a circular bump was pressed against the cloth. He chuckled, then took out the object. So there is, Daniel. He glanced up at our mother. He's very perceptive, isn't he? Mom smiled at me. My father hesitated, then ushered us all into the bedroom. Grace, he said to Mom.